And she's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties. It's not gay if it's underway. I don't think you can shake your head any harder than you are right now.
Thomas!
It's just masturbation.
You guys ready? I hope so. Fuck it, let's roll.
Molly, you don't need to discuss your plans with us. We can just say goodbye.
Hey, girl.
I am exhausted. I went and did an outreach at my youngest school today, and it was career day, but it wasn't like a career day like we went to like individual classes. It was a career fair. So the kids could walk up to us if they wanted to, and they didn't have to. And we were told we weren't allowed to pass out any goodies. And so I followed the rules. And no one else did. And so my table was so bare and it was so anxiety inducing. And also, why the fuck are first graders chaos monkeys?
Oh, they are completely.
What happened?
And then from second to like third, they're all like little gremlins. And the more you put them together, the worse they get.
Honestly, all of the other grades were fine, but the first graders were feral. I was like, what the fuck?
It's, you know what's weird though? It's like different groups of kids, right? Because here, it's the freshman class here. They are so freaking feral. Northern got banned from the zoo because of them. The zoo! I can't even explain like all the things they did here legally. And then the seventh grade class below Livia, insane. Again, insane. It's just different. There's different generations of kids. They just come out of the womb and they all decide at the same time that they're just going to fucking light the world on fire.
Well, I think some of it with the older kids, like particularly the high schoolers, a lot of them were alone during the pandemic. And so, you know, they became feral because they were doing whatever they wanted to do. But these first graders, I don't know. I've never had an issue with elementary four today.
They're alphas, man. The alphas are all like...
who are you telling? I'm raising two of them. So I do not want to read pod books right now. All I want to do is read Sunrise on the Reaping. And
I kind of already started it.
You started it already.
I needed background noise while I was doing my errands.
You traitorous bitch.
I'm sorry.
What the fuck, Molly?
I have to tell you every book I read. I was supposed to tell you every book I read?
I pretty much text message you and tell you every time I'm doing a non-pod book so you know that I'm going to be behind schedule. And you started Sunrise on the Reaping without me?
I'm not finishing it all the way through.
How
I'm
dare you? It. I introduced you to the Hunger Games. It. How dare you?
You did not introduce me to the Hunger Games. You and I talked about the Hunger Games. No, I know. I was reading them before you started meeting.
Okay, well, maybe it was that other... person that shall be not be named.
She who shall not be named.
Yeah.
But guess what I got at the store?
What is it?
You don't know that sound?
Lego?
Yeah. I'm making Piper's boyfriend a boutonniere for prom out of Legos.
I thought she said that was cringe.
He doesn't care.
I think it's cool.
He doesn't care. So all I gotta get is some blue flowers to match her dress. And we're rocking and rolling. Katie sent us a picture of her chicken's butt nuggets.
What?
Katie sent us a picture. Her chicken's made 22 butt nuggets.
To serve.
I do too.
Let me try to say that again because I said, I did not say what I meant. Do not disturb.
her phone is disturbed. Get down with the sickness.
What the fuck? Give her a point for that.
It's disturbed.
Do not like chickens. They only have one hole and it's very confusing to me.
But do you like eggs?
No.
Okay.
Eat them because it feels like you're supposed to, but I rarely eat them and I don't like them.
I don't eat eggs, but that's a whole nother conversation for us.
I don't like them. All right.
Let's talk this week's book, shall we? It's my week, which is so wild. Okay, this week we are talking about the super viral Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley.
And this is a library copy. Support local libraries.
Mine is not. I had to buy a physical fucking copy so I could write notes.
I had to buy a book, really physical book for the one. I had to buy a copy of the book we're reading next week because I can't get it in the library. The wait list is way too long.
Yeah, but I don't think you're going to be mad about buying that one the way I'm mad about buying this one. Anyways, yeah. Okay.
I do envy you for having to write notes for this one.
You know why it is? It's because I was bragging about having to write notes for a difficult story a couple weeks ago.
It's payback for you talking about Tress. It's
payback. I know. Okay, how about a synopsis? I tried something different because I struggled with this book.
Yeah.
Okay. You guys ready? I hope so. Fuck it. Let's roll. Welcome to the Ministry of Time. You've been assigned the bridge of Commander Graham Gordon and will help him as he transitions into everyday life here in the 21st century. You're going to have to deal with people from time trying to kill you and have to explain all the changes that have happened in the world and teach him how to Google things. He's from 1847 and was taken from an Arctic mission where he almost died. Mm-hmm. Good luck. Welcome to the ministry. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the best synopsis I could get. I just thought of Miss Time from Marvel, and I was like, you know what? I'll just do a Miss Time thing. That's the only thing that feels correct here.
I don't know what that is. I'm not into Marvel as much as you are, but yeah.
I feel like that was the only...
What a fucking disappointment.
What a fucking disappointment. I want to go over our cast of characters before we jump into questions, because there's a lot of people in this story. Too many.
I couldn't keep them straight.
I couldn't either. Henceforth, the work. Okay. So we have several people from the past that's taken from the past, and they're given a companion called a bridge. Mm-hmm. Okay. Everybody on board? Cool. So our first companion set is our narrator, which we don't get her fucking name. We only get her We'll explain.
But doesn't he call her something? He calls her.
He calls her cat.
That's little right. Kitten. Little cat.
Little cat. So she is assigned Commander Graham Gordon, who was a Victorian era naval officer who was on an Arctic mission, who would have died, and they took him through this.
But when we say Victorian era, I think a lot of people think this timeline in which Queen Victoria was on the throne. Right. However, he makes a point to talk about that Queen Victoria was on the throne for a very small amount of his life. Yeah. He actually predates the Victorian era, but because of the way we call it,
history is fucking history. The time frame specifically is 1847, which they go and they call each other by their years on top of their name. It's fucking weird, guys. Okay, so then our next bridge is Somalia. Somalia, her expat, his name is Captain Arthur Reginald Smith, and he was pulled from World War I. Mm-hmm. We think he's gay.
He's definitely gay.
We think he's gay. He came from the time 1916. Our next bridge is Ralph, and he got Margaret Keeble. The only woman they pulled from time, and she's from 1665, and she was extracted from the Great Plague because, you know, she was going to die. Then our next bridge is Ivan, who got Lieutenant Thomas Cardingham from 1645, and he was taken from the Battle of Naseby during one of the English Civil Wars. I really don't know English history enough to know that the English had...
I know is either they stole everything or I learned it from Outlander. So I can't say it's honestly accurate.
And then our last bridge set is Ed and Anne Spencer. Anne Spencer is from 1794, and she was extracted from the French Revolution.
So there were two women?
Yes, but she's the one that started not showing up on scanners and kind of just died.
Yeah, so that's why I got confused, because they had the narrator said that there was only one woman, and then when that woman died, I was like,
what?
Well, hold up. There's still another woman. I don't understand. But I distinctly remember that there was that she made a point to say that a guy got matched with the only woman.
Right. Like it. There's things that don't work in this book. And we're going to let's talk about it. Let's actually go into my questions. In this book. Okay.
Honestly, Molly, this book, go ahead and ask your question.
Okay. We'll talk about how disappointing it was to us in a minute.
I know. Go ahead.
The Ministry of Time is probably one of the more popular books from 2024. It's won Goodreads Choice Award for Science Fiction and was nominated for a fan favorite debut novel, which it didn't win. Even President Barack Obama said it was his favorite book in 2024. Can you fucking believe that? Did this book live up to the hype? Hit the bell. Bro.
So when you picked this book, it had been on my TBR as well. So I was glad to see it on there. And I wanted to read this book. It had so much hype. I thought it sounded like a really cool concept.
I thought it was a rom-com the first time I heard it.
No, I didn't think that. But this book is probably, thus far, my biggest disappointment of the season. With the exception of the book that we didn't end up covering.
I think this is my biggest disappointment of pod so far.
Ever?
Yeah.
No way. No way.
Yeah.
No way.
This is the most disappointing of...
You DNF'd three books that were scheduled for pod.
But I wasn't excited about those the way I was excited about this one. I put off reading this. I put off reading this from the time it released till we could put it on pod. I've been waiting since it released because I was so excited about this book because I loved the premise because I love a fucking sci-fi book.
Yeah, and it's hard to find. It's hard for us to find sci-fi that works for book besties because of the way we do our content. It's harder to cover. Honestly, just so people know, our best streamed episodes and both on YouTube and on the MP3 platform of podcasting, RSS channel, our best streamed are historical fiction, fantasy, and romance. We have a hard time putting sci-fi in there unless it has a romance element to it. And I guess this did, but it was cringe.
I mean, minus Jurassic Park.
Yeah, what the fuck?
I don't know what y'all fucking see in that. I am so glad you guys like that episode.
Keep listening to it, though, because...
Keep listening to it. I love that you guys love that episode.
You're racking up our streams on it.
Seriously. This came out in May of 24. So I've... Almost a full year I waited for this book.
Yeah.
So, like...
And I wanted to read it, too.
Yeah, and, like, I kept seeing it on... like socials and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to read this. I'm going to get to it. So it is currently my biggest disappointment of Book Besties reads.
It's not the lowest rated book I've ever read for the podcast or even this year, but like for my personal rating, but it is definitely one of my biggest disappointments of the pod.
I think I'm more frustrated with the writing style. There's a lot I'm frustrated with, and for it to get the hype it got was really...
Yeah.
It's very underwhelming for the hype it got.
Do you know what it reminded me of? And I know you like this book, but I didn't. How to Lose the Time War. Is that How to Win the Time War? How to Lose the Time War. It reminded me of that. Like, you didn't know what the point of the fucking book was until you were so far into the book that it was like, okay, I don't even care anymore. Because we both read this as an audiobook. It wasn't until like the last hour, maybe hour and a half, maybe 2 hours of the audiobook.
You figure out what's going on.
Before you even know what the point is. By that point, I don't care anymore.
I enjoyed the ride in How to Lose the Time War. I was okay with the way things were going because I felt the expectation of you're not supposed to know what's going on. This book never gave me the sense that she was an unreliable narrator. This book never gave me the sense that I wasn't supposed to fully understand what the situation.
I don't know that I would even call her an unreliable narrator. It seems to me, and I think I told you this off pod when we were talking about it. It seems to me that at some point in the book, and it was really far in the book, I realized that she's telling the story not as it's happening, but reflecting on what happened and trying to absolve herself of her part in it.
About like 20% in, I noticed she was using past tense a lot.
And present tense. She uses both.
Right. Both. And it was a mix. And and like, and at points in this book,
there's it kind of makes sense for a time travel book to be wibbly wobbly, timey-wimey, but.
Right. But our female lead, our narrator, the voice in this book is on one timeline. So why is her voice.
Not really.
Not really, but from our point of view and how we're following the story, we're following her on the current timeline, right? So why is she talking about the past, the present as the past when she's in the present?
I don't know. I just at some point realized she's trying to absolve herself of her responsibility for all of this. Like, she doesn't want to be held responsible.
I was so flustered by this goddamn book. So flustered by this book. Okay. So let's talk about the premise of this book, okay? Our lead is a bridge. Her job is to pretty much help someone from the past assimilate into modern day. Okay? With this in mind, were you into this idea? Did you think this would make the book enjoyable? Like, that they had, like, a companion? Like, did you, like, that this is how this started?
I did, because it sort of reminded me of Timeless, which we both loved that show. And if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. They do deep dives in each episode into history that's, like, less known. There's a lot of the women in history and a lot of people of color. And it just has a great, canceled, like, storyline.
Canceled and canceled again. Sucked.
But it kind of reminded me of that. Like, we're going to go back in time and we're going to fix things and we're going to help. They were bridging people. Like, there were people they brought to the future or to the present, and they were, you know. So it kind of reminded me of that. I thought it was a cool concept. Like, I feel like if we ever do successfully make time travel, and this is one of the things that we do with it, we would definitely have to have bridges.
But here's the thing. We didn't make it. In this book, they stole it.
Oh, I know. And they also stole the people. So they don't. So the British government, the Ministry of Time, which is part of the British government, they figure out a time machine. And it takes the whole book to know how they actually found about the time machine. But they are afraid of what will happen if they go back in time. So they open a portal and throw a net out and drag the people into the present.
We're literally doing human testing on people that they know they're going to die. So they were doing human testing on people that died already going to die anyways. Yeah. So that was their like thought process. It's so gross. So
the main guy, what's his name? What's
Commander Gore?
Yeah, Commander Gore. He dies in the exploration to the north to find the Northwest Passage, like a part of the mission that like completely failed, that everyone died.
They got and stuck in the ice. Oh my God.
But what's interesting is like, so he's one of the first to die.
Yeah.
And what's interesting to me in this book is they made it that he disappeared from the mission. Mm-hmm. And if you like time travel this, he didn't die. They took him. So, of course, he disappeared from the mission.
Yeah.
Because they came and kidnapped him.
Right. Right. It's like, what the fuck, guys? Like,
and the guy who was a World War One soldier, like, he was AWOL at that point. Like, I mean, when you're taking people from the past and you're just like, well, they were going to die anyway. So now this soldier goes from being someone who died in service to being someone who went AWOL.
Right.
And or missing in action. Right. Whatever. And then the other guy goes missing from the expedition. So they just, I guess, assume that he froze to death.
But I mean, yeah, I mean.
There are repercussions for doing this, even if the people die in their timeline.
I want to talk about the butterfly effect. I actually have a question about the butterfly effect. Yeah. I want to talk about this. Okay, good.
Okay.
like, I told you, I think there's a lot we can talk about here without liking it. Does that make sense? Okay, let's talk about the time travel aspect now. We learn a lot about how the expats get to this version of modern history. We just talked about this, throwing the net through, pulling them through. And we learn that the time travel is actually stolen. How do you feel the Ministry of Time handles the science of time travel? Because I truly have an issue with the butterfly effect, right? When we take somebody out of their timeline, we're editing their timeline. And we see this near the end of the book when we talk about how the timeline is changing when she's like, you didn't talk to him about 9/11? No, we talked about the Holocaust.
Yeah, see, I want to talk more about that, by the way. So this is always the problem with time travel books, time travel, you know, movies. Time travel is one of my least favorite sci-fi genres or subsets. I do not like time travel. There's only been one time travel book I've ever liked, because almost every single time travel book I've read, you always run into the butterfly effect and they don't like particularly acknowledge it, or there's some sort of like perversion, like the time traveler's wife, where he meets her, he knows that that is his wife, but he meets her when she's like a little kid.
So it's grooming.
And then on her 18th birthday, she loses her virginity to him, and he knows what she likes in bed, so he just does that to her. But it's like, that's really gross. Also in that book, in the first chapter, he goes back and I don't know if he comes forward or backward or whatever, but there's two of him in the same room and he's giving himself a blowjob.
Yeah. Because it's not weird, because it's just me doing
it's just masturbation. But
no,
it's not. I don't know.
I have an issue with the butterfly effect of these things. Right?
This is why we can never really time travel. Because even if we figured out the science behind it, we would fuck up things.
Oh, yeah. We are epic fucker-uppers.
Yeah.
Us here in this era.
There's only been one time travel book that I've liked. And that actually, the book is actually about the repercussions of the butterfly effect. Yeah. Like he ends up fucking something up that changes time.
One pebble,
so he
man.
Ends up in a time period that doesn't have the technology to actually time travel. Like the people who created it end up dying in a science accident when they were creating time travel.
Oh my God.
He royally fucked it up.
That's wild. It's
really
just
good.
My issue with time travel aspect of any sci-fi book is the butterfly effect, because they use major plot lines, like historical events, as their key points when they tell these stories. Here's the problem. You're trying to change history. That's not going to just change the key event you're trying to edit. It's going to change every single thing that happened after that event. And we don't talk about that. We just assume that things will go smoothly as soon as we fix that, right? Right? No.
Right. No. And Doctor Who does a good job with this. There's an episode of Doctor Who during David Tennant's first time
God
as the Doctor.
Bless David Tennant. 10 is my favorite.
Not mine. I like 11, but only with the pawns. Other than that, I want David.
My favorite thruple in the world.
Yeah.
No, that's not true.
That's kind of gross, though, because that's like his mother-in-law and father-in-law.
Wibbly wobbly tiny way. It's fine.
Anyway, there's an episode with David Tennant that there's something that happens on a space station. I can't remember what planet it's on, but the history is that everyone died, and it matters that everyone died because it ends up being a catalyst for future missions.
Right.
And he decides not to let them die and brings them back. He breaks the one rule that Time Lords really have. And the woman ends up killing herself because she doesn't want that. She wants the glory of having died in space and setting that life trajectory. Yeah. And I think they did a good job explaining that. This book does not talk about the repercussions. Well, they were all going to die anyway, so it's fine.
But it's not. It's not. Like saying,
I'm not going to give a complete.
On, it's,
I'm not going to give a complete spoiler here, but because of what they're trying to do, there's no way that there won't be repercussions.
No. And what they think they're fixing isn't going to... No.
And how are the people from the 16 and 1700s going to fix that?
No. What it is they were guinea pigs. They were their monkey, chimpanzee test guinea pigs, right? Mm-hmm. They were just random bodies from time that they knew they could take and nobody would miss. Mm-hmm. And that's awful because that's the cruel side of the human race right there.
Yeah.
That is the cruel side. Okay, let's talk about the dual POVs.
Okay.
For a second. We jump from the bridges present to the past of Commander Gores. And this constantly brings us back and forth throughout this novel to the point where we get gaps in their present timeline because we are jumping from Gores to hers. Did this help the novel or do you feel it dragged it down?
I don't think it helped at all. I think this was a way of her using the research she did on the people. But I don't think it was necessary in any way, shape, or form. I don't think you can shake your head any harder than you are right now.
It just feels like she did a lot of research on Commander Gore and like really wanted to flex those muscles. I get it. I too have done a lot of useless research. Yeah. I'm not forcing people else to digest it.
Yeah.
I'm not.
I didn't need his part at all.
No.
And there was like a whole storyline in which there's a native Inuit, the Eskimo Inuits.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he like leaves with her or something. They definitely like hooked up. I don't know. That was not necessary.
No, there's a lot of not necessary in this book.
There's also a story that like, I'm pretty sure one of his crewmates, fellow officers, like kind of sexually assaulted him.
Yeah.
There's a discussion of, well, it gets lonely at sea. By the way, I told Tom about this little minor story, and he said, it's not gay if it's underway. And I was like, I have questions. I have so many questions.
Everyone's a little bisexual. No, they're not.
I have questions. But he says it's a long time at sea. But when he's explaining it to her the first time, he was just in a really bad place. He had a really hard day. He just wanted comforted. But it sounds like he was sexually assaulted.
He was rationalizing the actions of the other person. Yeah. Which, that's what sexual assault victims do, especially when it happens by someone they know.
That's frequently what happens, yes.
Yep. Since we're talking about the bridges and the expats, I want to talk about the relationships. Do you feel like we needed all these? Do you feel like these pairings worked? Did this part of the story need to be this thick?
I completely feel like I don't want to make this a gender thing, but if they were going to really do this and be sensitive to the science and be sensitive to the time period, there's no way that a man and woman would be paired up. They would have paired the women with the women expats. They would have paired the men with men expats because there's an uncomfortability of them even living with someone of a different gender. And it made it very uncomfortable. And I feel like this was foreshadowing and I just didn't register it. She gets asked by her handler if she's attracted to him, like if she's attracted to him. And at that point in time, we kind of have a feeling that she is, the way that she describes his features. She's definitely attracted to him, but she's like, no, like I don't know what you mean. Like I'm not doing anything with him.
She's like mind fucking him half this book.
Yeah. But
she's sexualizing him half this book.
For sure. There's actually a really great conversation she has with the World War II soldier who she's like, are you his lover? And he's like, no, are you? And she's like, no. And they're both lamenting it because they're both in love with him.
Yeah. What? I don't think we needed this many people from the past. I understand that people had to die. I understand that we had to have this escalation of danger. Mm-hmm. It's just...
well,
it's like she put research and time and effort into the past, but mm-hmm. she didn't think about the aspects of the science fiction. She didn't think about the government structure she was working with. She didn't think about, like, there's just things I feel like that were lacking.
Yeah. And there are originally 7 of them that they bring to the present, but 2 die. And mm-hmm. it ends up being explained that they can only have a certain number of people in the wrong timeline, and there's already some other people who aren't supposed to be there. It didn't make sense. Anyway, at the end, which I'm not going to give away the ending yet, but the end, there's a character who like comes and finds them in like the cove or the caves or whatever, tunnels, what the fuck ever. Tunnels. I didn't even remember that character existed. I totally forgot about him.
There are so many characters because you forget really about until they randomly...
The 3 characters they really focus on are Commander
Gordon.
Gore. World War I veteran, and then the woman who was supposed to die for the plague, who is definitely Maggie. A lesbian.
Yeah. Oh, who loves dating apps.
Loves them. But she's for sure a lesbian, and she is having her best lesbo life because had to sneak around with all the women in her timeline, and now she can just bang all the chicks.
I think that's the only person that truly deserved to come to the future was Maggie.
They make her be on birth control because they don't want, a baby. Yeah.
And she's like, I'm not worried about that.
She's not worried about that because she's only into women. Oh, man.
Okay. So this book does have a lot of random plot points throughout it. And I don't feel like they all make sense. The bridge and Gore smoking weed. Him constantly smoking cigarettes. Mm. Like,
that kind of made sense to me because that felt very authentic to his time.
Right, but like, the tobacco, the weed, right. Like, her constantly talking about her childhood and, like, talking about her family and her life and her, like, I get it. The author is Cambodian British, and the bridge is also Cambodian and British, mm-hmm. which she's trying to represent her life, trying to show her, it just wasn't necessary to the storyline.
I'm gonna have to disagree with you because the reason that she gets the job is because she has experience working with refugees, and that's basically what they're considering the expats as refugees. I'm gonna have to disagree with you there.
But was that spider story necessary?
I don't even remember a spider story.
There's so much.
She like doesn't want him to kill it or something, and
right, but like it's named in their yard, and it's like
do you want to hear what my favorite unnecessary subplot was?
Please.
Now I just forgot. I got really excited to tell you and I forgot. I'll come back to it.
Okay, so I want to talk about language in this book for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because when it comes to this
novel... I just remembered.
Okay, go ahead.
Can I tell you before I forget again?
Please.
Okay, so my favorite unnecessary subplot is... so they... not only do they have bridges, but they basically go back to the ministry and take classes on, like, modern mm-hmm. culture and things. And my favorite unnecessary subplot is when they all earned the privilege of being able to use a computer and the internet, and they had a whole class on pornography and what was acceptable and what wasn't, because the time periods that they came from, it wouldn't be unusual for someone who is a child to be marrying a grown man. And they didn't want them like looking at child porn. So they had a whole conversation about what pornography was acceptable in this century. And then when she like checks his browser history, all he's searching for is like recipes.
He doesn't want porn. He doesn't care.
Well, he's trying to entice her into liking him, which we don't know till later. But I thought it was fucking hilarious that they had porn classes. Porn classes. Amazing.
And they had to they had to disable all the smoke alarms in the bill ministry because
he wouldn't, no matter where he was, like, absolutely not, I'm not giving it up, no way.
He's like, either I'm in the building and I smoke, or I leave the building and smoke. That's your only two options. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna smoke no matter what you want.
The budget for his supplies because he had to smoke so much. Also, that little conniving bastard ended up getting himself a lot of tools and he used them against the ministry. He usurped the ministry. Like, I know that's a spoiler, but he ends up being like the head of the ministry.
He's pretty smart. He's pretty smart. He usurped them. Yeah. Well, I mean, the first time, like, they do their first check-in, right? Mm-hmm. They're like talking about Gore and all he's done, and like they asked if he did any weird things, and the only thing he did was he was so irritated that he didn't understand how the toilet worked that he took it apart.
That is something my husband would do. The year we were dating before we got married, I had a brand fucking new toaster. Okay.
No way.
I came home from work one day and the whole thing was taken apart. And I was like, what the actual fuck? You voided the warranty. Watkins. If it wasn't working, we could have just taken it back.
Thomas.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to jump to my morality question now.
Okay.
Morality plays a big part in this book. Is what the ministry doing ethical? We see that even the handlers / bridges at times are even questioning if what they're doing is for the greater good.
No. There's no... The problem is that for many, many decades, scientists have ignored morality in favor of science. And I am not in favor of that, but I will say... there have been major developments that have come out because of ignoring morality. That's what they're doing here. They've completely ignored the humanity of science. Mm-hmm. You're literally testing on humans. Like, you didn't There's go back and, like, swipe ethics. A bird. Like, you took a human.
Took a human being.
Right.
A human being with thoughts and beliefs and heart and soul and just like all of the things.
They had fucking lives. They had whole other lives. Family, and it doesn't matter that they were going to die. Like, that is their story.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just changed it. You just changed it. So I want to talk about the spy aspect of this novel now because it felt so out of place.
Yeah. What?
If that makes sense. Okay. We have someone trying to kill not just the expats and the bridges. Did you have any clue who it was?
I don't, like, we never find out who it was, right? We just know that it's somebody from like the 2030s.
So the
2300s.
Technically, it's okay. So I'm going to jump into the major spoiler now, guys, because I got to explain this. So the major spoiler of this book is she is her own handler.
Yes.
She came
about her, 2 hours from the end of the audiobook. You find that out.
She came from the future to the past to handle her, to help her process this whole thing. Okay.
Yeah. She's from the 2030s.
Right. But the her from 2030s is actually helping kill some of these people because they realize that what they did was wrong and they're trying to shut the program down.
No. No. That's not what happened. Huh?
I'm so fucking confused. Okay. You go.
She comes from the 2030s to make sure that they do the time travel because they need to set that in motion in order for her husband to become the head of the ministry and to keep fighting the battle that they've been, you know, doing.
Right.
The people who are trying to kill her, and I can't think of his name, but he doesn't ever have a name. He just gets a title.
It's Brigadier. Brigadier. Yes, the Brigadier.
He's from the 2300s. And he has basically inherited a London that doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to just give you guys the spoilers. This is what this whole book's about. It's about climate change.
Yep.
Basically, the Ministry of Time was created to stop the acceleration of climate change, which, again, why are we taking people from the 1600s and 1700s? They weren't running fossil
fuels. Why is time travel the problem with climate change?
It's not. Do you know how much fossil fuel you would have to use to actually travel through time? The carbon footprint that you would leave would be astronomical. Like, you're not going to fix time or climate change that way. That's absurd. But these guys from the 2300s, they are trying to kill the people in our timeline. We'll just go 2024 because that's when the book came out, because they don't want the time travel, because it ends up, you know,
being the problem,
being a bigger problem than a solution. But that still doesn't fix the issue, because now let's talk about the wibbly wobbly.
It makes no sense.
Because let's talk about the wibbly wobbly timey wimey of it. If you're from the 2300s and traveling through time and you kill all the people that make time travel possible, how the fuck are you time traveling from the 2300s?
It's an assassin mission. He's a Japanese fighter pilot from World War II.
He's kamikazing.
He's just kamikazing. He knew what he was doing. That was really hurtful. I'm sorry to the Japanese Americans out there. That was mean. I shouldn't have said that.
I don't like it.
But okay, here's the thing. See, my problem with this isn't a spy novel. She's not writing a spy novel. She jokes about James Bond. She jokes about M6, but she doesn't do enough to give me the spy aspect. And it's not enough for this to be a science fiction for me. I don't know what this book is, but it doesn't belong in my sci-fi.
And
it doesn't.
She is thinking that the Brigadier is the one that killed her friend, and actually she's the one that I give up.
Right.
I give up. Right. I filled 45 minutes of content. Can we?
Yeah, almost. We're almost there.
I don't know if I can do it anymore.
We got two more questions. So
how many more?
Two.
All right. I'll allow it.
Well, technically three. I got your Goodreads question.
Fucking hell.
I'm done! Three's too much!
Draw the line! Go ahead.
In the end of this novel, we learn that she's her own handler. We just talked about this. The climate control, blah, 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 blah. Do you think that the author did a good line at streamlining her idea from the beginning to the end, making this a clear thought process?
I'm gonna actually say yes. I think it made...
The fuck?!
I actually think that she tied the bow nicely, but
it doesn't feel streamlined.
It was so deep into the book that I didn't care anymore, Molly. But when I read that part, I went, oh, that's what's happening. But I didn't care anymore. I didn't care enough.
I don't care. So, did we need a relationship between Gore and his bridge?
No.
Okay, that was a sub question to this. And now I gotta
go. And it was really gross and inappropriate. And we learn that they get married, and we learn that they have a baby, and they name it after the World War I soldier, because he gets killed.
What's the grossest thing is he puts the World War I soldier's ring on her hand when they get married. That's what's gross to me. Like, I love you, but wear the ring of my other lover.
You know what really bugged me? Even though we do have this, like, bow that's tied for, like, the time travel aspect of it, kind of, he does not trust her anymore. He does not at all believe that she's a good person. He thinks she's a traitor. He leaves and goes to what we assume is Alaska. And, the woman, whatever, Maggie, is that her name? That one from the past? She goes with
the lesbian.
And they get she gets a postcard. Our bridge gets a postcard. And we assume, based on what she says, that she ends up going to where he is.
Going to them, yeah.
So it continues. But we don't ever get a clear ending for their story. And also, I have so many questions, because she shot a fucking bullet into the portal for time travel, and people just like popped like bubbles, including herself. So did they die, or did they go back to their timeline? Like, did she kill herself? Like, how does the portal still work so that they could have come back in time? Like, I don't get it.
I don't get it either. Here's what really irritated me to the point where this became a two for me, okay? Mm-hmm. This is how she ends this book. Forgiveness, which takes you back to the person you were and lets you rest them. Hope, which exists in a future in which you are new. Forgiveness and hope are miracles. They let you change your life. They are time travel. Come on. All of this to remind people that they need to have forgiveness and hope in the world? Come on. Come on!
No.
Okay.
You know what bothers me more than anything about this book? Emily Henry plugged it.
That it's being made into a TV show?
Emily Henry plugging it.
Okay, I was going to say that it's getting TV play, too.
I don't care. It's the BBC. All right.
Did I miss anything? April Goodreads.
My name's April. Thoughts. We've only been friends for, 15 years, but whatever.
Whatever. It's fine.
I gave it a 2.5. It was a 2 the entire time for me until I realized what the fuck she was doing. And then I was like, okay, she did tie this bow. I'm going to give her the extra half. But that was it. It is nice, a great disappointment to me.
It is. It's a 2. It's a solid, solid stinky 2 for me.
I'm fine with that.
Stinky 2.
Do you want to know what I found to be the most interesting part of the book?
When it ended?
The author's note, where she talks about the true person of Commander Gore.
Yeah.
That's not...
That should be where the interesting thing is.
Come on.
Do you want to talk about next week?
Yeah. So next week we're reading another viral sensation, The Wedding People. And this one is by Allison Espach or Espach, something like that. This one is one we have not been able to keep it in the library. I mean, it comes in and goes right back out. It's on hold consistently. The audiobook, the ebook, and the physical book. I put this on pod because so many people were returning it to the library, like, you have to read this book. And damn. I was like, cool, I will read the book. So, and it is also a bestseller from last year. Mm-hmm. I hope it's better. I hope it's better than this.
God, I hope so too.
This month we have like the books we were covering this month are all like viral, except the one we're doing with Tom.
I mean, look at Sharkheart. Like,
yeah. By the way, how fun was that?
That's hilarious. I hope you guys liked that as much as we loved it because it was so funny.
It was fun for us. I don't know if everyone else.
I got to color a whole coloring page while I watched.
Yeah, I know. I told Tom, I was like, there's going to be some parts that you have to cut out because we distracted them with comments. And he's like, I knew that was going to happen.
Well, like they'd gap and I'd be like, oh shit, they need help. Because that's my job. I think they did a fantastic job though. They did a great job.
If we ever need a break, we'll just have Chezzy and Katie fill in for us because they did awesome.
Mind you, they didn't need my help. It's just Molly thinking everybody needs extra help, and Molly's the same person that's supposed to help them.
Also, they had never interacted with each other before, ever.
I know.
Except like the emails leading up to the episode. They had never done it.
And they had great energy. It was such a good book.
They really did.
I hope you guys like it. If not, go listen to that damn episode, fuckers.
And read the book.
Sorry, Potatoes.
Sharkheart is really good. Sharkheart is really good. Is
so good. Okay. I'm going to go make dinner. I might take an edible.
Molly, you don't need to discuss your plans with us. We can just say goodbye. Hey, guys, follow us on Patreon, please. Support our Patreon. We are really trying to just pay the bills to keep the pod going.
We just need to keep the lights on.
Yeah, like, honestly, I don't care about making money. I just need to be able to pay the bills for the pod because we are in our 8th season and it's like, this is an expensive hobby.
Word.
I mean, it's no more expensive than Lego. Like, be honest.
Seriously. But. All right. We'll see you, Potatoes. Same bat time, same bat channel next week.
Next week when we read The Wedding People.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on Book Besties. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly and not those of anyone else. Today's book was The Ministry of Time by Kalina Bradley. Your book besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins. Editing by Thomas Watkins and music is Sleep Sweetly by Brigida. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. You can also support the Book Besties by joining our Patreon at Book Besties Podcast. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.